We've reported and aired dozens of stories over the last year about the East Palestine train derailment, including the one you just heard from Reed Frazier, and stories over the last couple of weeks from Reed and Julie Grant. That reporting was supported by the Fund for Investigative Journalism. So what did we learn, and what do we still want to know about what happened in the wake of the derailment? Reed and Julie are joining me now to have that conversation. Thanks, guys.
Hi, Kara.
Hi, Kara.
So what are some of the top line things that we've learned through this reporting about what happened in East Palestine? Reed, you first.
Well, I think for me, it's just learning just how much there are limits to what the government can and does do to prevent harm to people in a community. The fact that they opened up this town for people to move back, and then possibly hundreds of people got sick from apparent chemical exposures, was sort of a real eye-opener for me in terms of like how little the government does in some cases to prevent people from coming into contact with dangerous chemicals and hazardous situations. And that sort of bleeds into the next big piece of learning, was just watching people digest all this information and then in real time seeing this distrust in the government grow and believing that, you know, they were sort of in league in part to protect the companies that were responsible for this.
How about you, Julie?
I reported most recently about the public health response. You know, the expertise on these industrial chemicals, vinyl chloride, butyl acrylate, that lies in the federal government. It was just surprising to me how long it took for the federal public health response to kick in. I mean, really, there was a lot of wrangling between the state government and the federal government about what kind of assistance would come in terms of public health. And it was like fully 2 weeks or more before the Centers for Disease Control arrived in East Palestine. And by that time, they were too late to really kind of capture the health data that this community would have needed to be able to really track how the chemical exposures they experienced in the worst moments of this disaster. You know, they weren't able to capture that. What we learned from public health experts is this community will really never know whether or not there is a long-term health impact from this or not. They have no way to really connect things back because the work that needed to be done right when the incident happened was not done.
What did you learn from reporting these stories that you hadn't considered or understood in your past reporting? Was there something different about this story?
Of course, there's a lot of things that are different. For one, this is sort of probably the most high profile environmental story I've ever covered. But really, the funny thing is how similar this is to every environmental story we seem to cover, where something happens in a community. A lot of times it's because a company spilled something, or there's a suspected release into the community caused by a company, and people sort of look around and sort of wait for the government to do something about it. And sort of gradually they kind of get disillusioned that governmental agencies don't step in with more force to prevent this kind of thing from happening or cut off the source of pollution. I mean, of course, in this case, it was sort of a one-time huge release of chemicals, but it really sort of did remind me of lots of stories we've done on pollution from natural gas operations, coal mining, you know, steel mills, etc., and the sort of lack of trust in government agencies to protect people in these impacted communities. That sort of sticks out for me.
And I think in East Palestine, we've seen this happen over time where you have some residents who really were not affected, maybe in the first few days, but then they felt fine. They haven't had any real health symptoms, and they don't understand that there are these other people in town who have these lingering symptoms, maybe also have a lot of anxiety over the long-term issues they might experience from this. I think it's hard for those people who don't have those symptoms sometimes to understand and to believe them. I've had folks who live in town who are feeling sick or whose children are still sick say, you know, I'm not going to let them gaslight us. Like, we come to town, we feel sick, so you're not going to tell me I don't. And yet it does create this divide where other people who don't feel sick maybe just want to move on and want the community, you know, want everyone to stop talking about the train derailment and moving on with more positive things that they see around them and all the benefits they're getting from all the money Norfolk Southern has put into their city parks and into their community, rather than dwelling on how all these chemicals are making some number of people ill.
And let me just add, especially when the EPA is telling everyone that they've got all these mobile air monitors around town and they're not finding any contamination, and that the levels that they're seeing, even if they do see levels, are below the health safety standard. So that gives like this level of credence that like it is safe. I mean, even if that's not exactly what the EPA is saying, that is the message that is relayed to people.
But, you know, last summer, it's June, you have the CDC come to town, and there were a handful of people there who were saying, look, I had tests in the past few months that showed I had vinyl chloride markers in my body, or my children had this in their bodies. And if these chemicals, as the CDC has told us, move very quickly, you know, within hours and days through the body, why are we still seeing it? And the CDC did not come out, or the EPA, say, well, we need to figure out how you're being exposed. They said, well, most likely that's incorrect, or it's some kind of something that you're doing. Maybe you're smoking. Maybe there's certain vitamins you're taking. And also, EPA did not come in and say, hey, let's go to those people's homes and monitor in their homes for air quality and see what's going on there. No, they just told them to make sure they were talking to their doctors, so in case they develop some kind of cancer, that they can treat the cancer. These are not responses that are make you feel like anyone has your back.
So we know that a lot of people who live in East Palestine still have a lot of questions. What are some of the issues that came up in the reporting that you still have questions about?
One of the main things, you know, in terms of public health that came out in my reporting, was that soon after the derailment, doctors in the area were asking, what should we do? People are coming in with rashes, with headaches, with respiratory symptoms. Should we be doing some kind of test to see if this is caused by the chemical exposure? Maybe a blood test, a urine test, maybe a breath test. And the advice they got, this was a few weeks after, at a webinar given by the Pennsylvania Department of Health, was, no, we do not recommend you do a test for chemicals. Looking forward, I wonder, you know, there has been a push in the public health community to get these kinds of tests, these biological tests, as part of the emergency response. So you could do, as was described to me by one expert, you know, emergency responders could, in the first day, have people just take those. And you don't need to know what the chemicals are right away, but you put them away in storage, you just put them in a cooler, then you have that data so that in the long term, you can figure out what the health impacts are to this community, or if this happens again somewhere else.
What about you, Reed?
Well, I'm actually really curious to see if there will be any changes to rail safety legislation that could have maybe prevented something like this from happening. A lot was made of it in the beginning, and then it just kind of peters out, like a lot of things do when they get to Congress. And so I'm really curious to see if some of the safety considerations, if these regulations are going to move ahead.
What are you going to be keeping your eye on in the future?
This summer, the National Transportation Safety Board says it will release its determination of what caused the derailment. There's also an Inspector General's report that could come out about the EPA's Inspector General says it has initiated an investigation into the agency's response in East Palestine. Also, there's lots of lawsuits.
These are the lawsuits against Norfolk Southern by people who were impacted by the derailment in East Palestine and that region.
Yes. Maybe we'll see some interesting things come out through these lawsuits, things you could only kind of get out of the company through the act of discovery in litigation.
Thanks to both of you.
Kara, thank you.
Thanks, Kara.
That was the Allegheny Front's Julie Grant and Reed Frazier. You can read all of their reporting and the stories from our news partners about East Palestine at AlleghenyFront.org/East Palestine.